Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Computer Vision in Production podcast show, a podcast show where we talk all about everything computer vision, from the individual components of the technology, including vision, cameras, and deep learning, right through to hearing about some of the most interesting applications that companies are using at the moment. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Computer Vision in Production podcast show. I'm your host, Anthony Kelly. Today's guest is Roland Mertens. Roland is a machine learning engineer who has an expertise in computer vision and robotics. And if you're interested, make sure you check out his blog, pinchofintelligence.com. He's the writer and founder of that blog as well. Roland, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Yeah, thanks, Anthony. It's great to be here and great that we finally found the right time to record this.
Yeah, so I'm based in Ireland at the moment, like everyone else, working from home in Ireland on an island. It turns out everyone must be buying mics. And I think it took me three and a half weeks to get my mic delivered. I wasn't sure if they were making it fresh just to send it over, but not a store in Ireland had one at all.
Inventing a new one.
Yes, straight off the production line. But yeah, so look, Roland... Yeah, go ahead.
I think they checked who bought it. So they were like, oh, Anthony, he can't have one.
Like all the big stores were all sold out, all the electronic stores. I even went to music stores. They didn't have one. I had this one being delivered and I even tried to buy one while mine was in the post because it was taking so long. But Roland, why don't you give a little bit of an introduction to yourself and your background in computer vision and robotics?
Yeah, thanks. So for me, I studied AI. I started doing that like 11 years ago in the city of Nijmegen in the Netherlands. And there's quite a lot of things I worked on and always related to autonomous driving or drones or robots in general. You know, there's no like feeling better than finally getting something working. So just as a short overview, I have been trying to implement like talking functionality, you know, natural language processing, etc., for healthcare robots. I tried to make vision for autonomous drones. I worked a bit on natural language processing to automatically translate text from one thing to the other. And yeah, lately I've been working on self-driving cars. So yeah, in general, I always try to find some interesting new applications for AI. Just try to find a normal thing, try to add a bit of, you know, this tiny bit of intelligence to it, this pinch of intelligence, and I can post it on my blog, pinchofintelligence.com.
Nice, that's really cool. The NLP stuff, I know it's not really relevant to autonomous driving, but with robotics, I would love to see a robot that speaks in an inner city Dublin language. Like, it would just be so funny.
You know. Yeah, I mean, at some point, you know, maybe you can, especially now with all these GANs, you know, where you can replace every face with a specific, you know, the face of Nicolas Cage. Maybe at some point you can just replace the sound of your Alexa with whoever you want.
Yeah, you can call the robot Anto from Dublin. Anto is actually quite a common name in Dublin as well, which is funny. So yeah, so that kind of takes you through to from where you are now. You know, background in NLP, computer vision. So we talk kind of about computer vision, and the show is called Computer Vision in Production. What sort of computer vision in production have you worked on? And you mentioned autonomous driving for one, but I suppose we don't see cars on the road that are autonomous driving just yet. So what type of models are being productionized at the moment and are in this industry?
Yeah, no, you're right. So one thing is that, so it's great that that you're now starting a podcast on computer vision, because there should just be more attention to this, and especially for the in-production part. And there are, of course, now these autonomous vehicles, which nobody can really use yet, right? They're in test phase and not in production. And there are so many things out there. You know, I'll tell you what, Anthony. So this morning, I went to the supermarket, you know, and they got all these self-scan things. And then you can take your vegetables, but of course you can't scan a vegetable, right? You can't scan your apple or something. So then you have to go to this machine and just manually select that you're buying and Apple. Isn't that terrible? Why don't they use computer vision for this?
I've seen that. There was a company who do software as a service, and they basically emptied out like a trolley or a cart of these items, but they obviously made it very difficult because they put labels facing against the camera, they put items stacked on top of other items, and they put them through basically on top of each other. That would look, we know what they are because we know what they are. But the model actually performed it and calculated everything and put it on the receipt on the till and said, this is your total cost. I've seen it. Yeah. I just haven't seen it in stores yet.
Yeah. So why is this not in production? That's the question. So if there's someone listening to this podcast, reach out to us and tell us why this isn't a thing yet. I'm very eager to know.
I think maybe I could be wrong, but my initial guess would be is the initial investment, maybe from a store, make that.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's not store ready yet. Because you've got so many different products, so many different labels from around the world. It's funny, I know it's something basic like milk can be packaged differently everywhere.
Yeah. So you basically have a classification problem with too many classes. Yeah, maybe I'll just go to the supermarket after recording this podcast, just buy a lot of vegetables and try it out.
There you go. That could be one for the blog. That'd be really cool as well.
Indeed. Now I want to see why it's so difficult. But yeah, anyway, so in terms of in production, so far I worked mostly on experimental stuff, right? So things like self-driving cars, they will be on the road soon, but at the moment they are all being tested. And the same goes for autonomous drones, where we tried to deliver food inside a restaurant. And I think so far that's also still an idea for the future and not something which is already brought into production.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that. I remember, was it the spoof video of the FedEx blimp where it was like a massive blimp that had like thousands of babies, tinier blimps.
Yeah.
And they just dispatched everywhere. It looked like if a spider who has a nest, gets hit and the babies explode. It looks like something like that, but it was a FedEx delivery blimp that was going to dispatch packages.
Yeah, it looked like if you played StarCraft, you know, you got this, the Protoss has this thing called a carrier, which is just an airship with loads of tiny drones next to it. It really looked like that.
Yeah, I know. I thought it was cool. And then I was told it was fake. But then you also have the Boston Dynamics are doing trying to get the robo dog to deliver packages and mail as well, right? But to the front door.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that the Deutsche Post here in Germany, the German Postal Service, they have been doing experiments with self-driving cars for the sidewalk. And the idea was actually quite good that if you, I don't know, did you ever deliver newspapers and things?
No, it's funny. It's actually, it wasn't a common thing in Ireland. Huh. I did cut grass.
Yeah. So, yeah, I delivered these newspapers, right, every week. And then the frustrating thing about delivering posts is not that you have to walk to every door, but you have to do some intelligent path planning because you always have to go back to your post. So if your post just, you know, all the remaining parcels you have to deliver, if they just drive after you, you have a way better time delivering your parcels. So yeah, let's hope that becomes a reality.
Yeah, I think, I can't remember, but it was a cartoon I seen and they had a robotic arm. I think it was actually Futurama. And they were delivering newspapers, but they hooked it up onto like a cannon on the roof of the spaceship, and it was automatically just firing newspapers. And not relevant at all. Funny.
Okay, so yeah. So how would you make this if you wanted to make this? How would you get started?
You want to be starting with data, do a little bit of a feasibility study, right?
And I mean, so mostly the problem will be so many different environments, right? If you always live or post in the same neighborhood, I guess it could work. But if you want to scale it up to all of Germany, you got to map all of Germany.
Yeah, it's quite a mess there. I suppose the first thing I think that the one that I've seen with solving it is that it will distribute like 10 robots per street, and it will wait at the top of the street while the robots will just deliver the mail and then go back into the, let's say, the hub vehicle, the home vehicle, and then it will go to the next street and do the same again.
Yeah, that sounds like a reasonable approach.
But I don't think the answer is there. I don't know if drones would be the way forward either, though, because you can't realistically have that many drones going around your neighborhood.
Yeah, I think it's mostly nice for outside of the city. Or if you look at markets in Austria or something, you know, if you have difficult to reach houses, then reaching every house with your tiny parcel just takes you 5 or 10 minutes. If you could just drive into one of these tiny Austrian villages and just release the drones, then also people don't mind. They have a big yard, right, or a big driveway. They can easily land. But inside Amsterdam or something, it won't be very useful.
I did share something on LinkedIn. It wasn't an autonomous drone, but I guess it won't be long until that happens. But it's quite relevant to that point because there's like a hospital in Scotland and it's in the Highlands, but you can't connect to it. You have to get there by boat and by vehicle. It takes minimum 6 hours. And they got a drone to send medical supplies in 15 minutes.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah, that's where drones will shine in the end.
So That is amazing. And I guess, you know, after so many runs of that, you've got the data, you know the landscape, it's going to be able to go by itself.
Indeed. And even if you just have to control the robot for the last minute or something, you know, select a landing spot, and still better than waiting these 3 hours or something, you said.
Yeah, no, I checked it out. I checked out the company. I think they were called Thames. And one of the guys who's like one of the lead computer vision engineers, he's also the drone pilot. So, I mean, what better use cases can you find than actually pilot the device yourself?
Indeed. That's maybe another interesting thing. There's a lot of emerging robotics things, right?
Yeah.
A lot of these, if you really look into how these tiny delivery robots work, a lot of companies are still delegating the control to remote people in like low-wage countries.
So, I've seen that one. Is that the Japan where they were like stocking the fridges with robots? They had someone else with a robot, with a robotic receiver in his hands. It's really slow, though.
Yeah, I don't know anymore. I don't want to name any brands because I'm not sure who does it. But some companies are really either only doing very specific areas like on-site of college campus autonomous, or they're using low-wage workers to remotely control robots. So I think that the only conclusion we can draw, Anthony, is there's not enough people working on this.
I mean, that was kind of the way in a lot of other industries, right, where people were saying, oh, we've got this software, it's completely digitalized, it's AI, it will process your invoices quicker and more efficiently than a human. And then it turned out that they had, as you said, you know, 50 people performing like the brunt of this work in a very low cost area of the world. There was no AI. They just had like a 24-hour machine of employees coming in to process or to label the data and then send it to the right place.
There's one of these fake AI companies.
Yeah, I've actually seen a report on it. I think it's like almost 60% of companies who claim their AI aren't AI or don't have AI in production that actually affects the customers or that you will never see.
Yeah. The other thing I frequently see is that people at some point train an algorithm, but the AI doesn't learn anymore. So they have something in production, but if there's a shift, like if you trained on summer images and now it becomes winter, that they at some point the company is just saying, okay, we got our model, and then it works very well at the start and just degrades over time while the world changes around it.
Great question I have for you, specific to autonomous driving on that. Now, how would you prefer to train a model to detect people? Because you can't blur them. You can't make the model not show them, because if you make them invisible, the car will never see them. If you blur them, the vehicle will never see them. What's the best take on that?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, right? With GDPR, you can't have public unblurred data sets anymore. So now every company basically has to, you can still record data according to GDPR, right? So you can still record your data yourself and then use it in-house. But when you send it to an external labeling company, you have to blur it before it gets there. So I guess the only reasonable answer is you can still train on these public data sets, but then for the last bit, you have to really label your own data.
I've kind of seen this topic emerging. I've heard of federated learning before, you know, making all algorithms explainable. Black boxes are now white boxes. But recently I've started to see it, you know, peak its head up in the computer vision industry. Do you think federated learning could be a possible solution to this if you're training models on the device, but it's never leaving the device? Or will that only work when we actually have an end product?
So if you want to do federated learning, and you specifically want to recognize people, you either have to find a way to, you know, find these people in your image without them, like by you have to automatically label them, right? So the nice thing which federated learning can do is that you train a model on someone's personal device, you know, personalized for them, without their data going to your central cloud and going to your central data set. And it would also be really nice, you know, if a self-driving car could learn these things or learn representations on its own. But for safety critical applications, this is kind of a no. You know, you don't want to tell people, you don't want to tell the general public, hey, we just launched this self-driving car. At the start, it might be a bit bad, you know, because it's still learning. Now, if you launch a self-driving car, it has to be safe. It has to be perfect. It has to test everyone.
Now, what if you took every vehicle off the streets except self-driving cars?
Yeah, so I think someone at some point sent me this proposal to just put fences on the side of the street so you can never hit a pedestrian. And it's interesting because I was thinking about this last week. I'm currently in the Netherlands, and the Netherlands has the absolute best cycling infrastructure. I would say the best infrastructure in general, because other countries are trying to optimize for throughput of cars, which means that nobody can take a bike anymore, which means that there's more cars on the road, which means there's less throughput of cars. So the Netherlands has removed a lot of on a lot of intersections, all the help is removed for people. So people have to communicate, you know, like by looking at each other, you know, who's going, who's not going. And that tends to really help for traffic accidents, reducing traffic accidents with humans. And now I am wondering, you know, if I'm programming a car, you know, you want to have some rule-based behavior, but in Netherlands they are removing all the rules. So they're now turning this whole self-driving car problem into a how do I communicate with a human problem.
Yeah, I can't imagine an algorithm would perform on no rules. I suppose it would just, I also have a fear that, you know, if we see autonomous driving and a human has, and something happens and someone gets hurt, I think, you know, a lot of faith will go out the window. Even if they're driving safe, you know, as a human, you'd be like, ah, I can do better than this. I can do better than this machine. No problem. even if you can't, you know? And then if there's a mistake, you'll question the machine. Well, I'll be honest, I make these mistakes every day. And I never question myself, particularly when driving.
Yeah, well, you should. But I heard that 80% of the population thinks that they drive better than average.
Oh, I would say I drive bang average. Not better, but I would be very, very average. It also depends on what day you get.
So you drive better than a test self-driving car, but not better than a real self-driving car.
Well, do you know what? It really depends. If I've got my mother in the vehicle with me, I drive better than 80%. But if I don't, I can be a little bit less cautious. So, you know, moving on with self-driving and computer vision production, deep learning. So one thing that we would look at is, you know, having a potential GAN model to anonymize, I suppose, anything that needs to be anonymized, license plates, face details. Where else does deep learning come in? Or have you seen deep learning make big inroads with autonomous driving?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things which are now getting AI, right? So AI on the edge is becoming a big thing. So smartphones are having more and more AI applications in them. Cell phone towers at some point will be able to compute some things. So anything which is like low power and low latency can suddenly start running AI applications. And you see that in, I don't know, Siri trying to predict what you want to do, or you see it in my Gmail is trying to predict what I'm going to say. Or if you take a picture, you know, it will tell you where the faces are and could maybe even tell you if someone is not smiling. I've seen that those applications before.
Nice.
So I think slowly, like, it's entering our world.
I do.
Except for supermarkets, where you still have to manually, like, find out, tell the computer that you're buying an apple. I'm really annoyed at that.
You're seeing. I bet you. If we had to buy an apple and you had to do something with a smartphone, it would be done by now, because smartphone technology is just going through the roof in terms of how it's coming along in development.
So,
in terms of computer vision, do you think it's important for someone who's in computer vision to know about edge devices? Look, it's not relevant to every aspect of computer vision. But majority of companies are now running them on edge devices. When they hit production stage, you know, they're in something smaller, whether it be a vehicle, a smartphone, it's surveillance camera. Is that going to be the way forward for computer vision? Are we hitting less research and moving more into production of the scale?
Yeah, so it depends a bit on how you look at it, because you can have the very academic view of the only thing I have to do as a computer vision engineer is design a better algorithm. But the software engineer in me still says, yeah, but you want to deploy it in an efficient way, right? So everyone who is training neural networks, of course, uses GPUs. And then you've got maybe you can use your tensor cores and the T4 GPUs as a cheap way to get started. And that's already useful for someone who is running something as a service in the cloud. Or it's already useful if you're even training, if you know what kind of hardware you're having. If you can optimize that, you can train faster and better and with more servers. But then, of course, I think that a lot of the nice thing about computer vision is that if you only have it in the cloud, the amount of applications is limited. Whereas if we can manage to take it in the real world, we can make all these really cool applications, like detecting what fruit you're buying in supermarkets, or maybe doing an activity detection in your smart home to set the lighting for the right mood. Or we can make delivery vehicles. There are so many options of things where you currently need a human in the loop in the real world that it just makes a lot of sense to try to automate it. So other other examples are like a smart camera, you know, smart surveillance camera, or just detecting how many vehicles are standing on the parking lots to indicate where people can park their car. So many things will be better if we manage to get computer vision in production in the real world.
Yeah. Now, this is, I could call it a personal preference topic, but, you know, if you're looking to build something on an edge device, you've got Raspberry Pi, you can use NVIDIA tools, NVIDIA GPUs, which are really good. And you can also build your own custom built GPUs. In an ideal world, what do you think is going to be most successful? All require different types of skills. Someone who's like, you know, close to an embedded software computer vision engineer. Some require someone who's just more focused on computer vision, and then the other one, you know, maybe even more programming heavy. What do you think is best practice for
I think that at the moment, people basically have, it depends a bit on your application, but I think people have four options to, you know, deploy something in the real world. So either you can just use a laptop with a good GPU, you can use a device like an NVIDIA Jetson, or you can use a Raspberry Pi, or Google also has these Google Coral dev boards, which are edge devices with a TPU. So if you don't care about the size of your, you know, compute power, you are, for example, deploying in your own vehicle or something, and you have lots of space, you can just use an entire CPU with your laptop. But if you are already having a Raspberry Pi, you can do efficient inferencing without a GPU and maybe using TensorFlow Lite, although it's pretty challenging. If you want to directly work on something embedded, you can also use an NVIDIA Jetson that already gives you CUDA cores, which you can parallelize other processes with as well. You know, it's a bit more can do everything. So I at some point made like a follow me cupcake robot for this. And the other option then, if you want to have a Raspberry Pi sized board, but also some like sped up inference, then you can also use this Google Core dev board, which I think is really nice. It's this edge device with this TPU. A bit hard to set up, but very fast if you can make it work. So I once used that to make a pigeon recognition device.
Yeah, and I suppose one thing as well is you're not even always guaranteed success on this. You know, you've got to have the right processes in place to ensure that the quality of the images and the videos, whatever it is that you're going to be running, well, it actually is just image or videos on an edge device, going to be coming through consistent. And if that algorithm performance starts to drop, that basically your product begins to fail. Like, how would you look at building something for best practice and to ensure long-term health? Like, if you build, so just for example, if you build something into security cameras, you don't want to have to go around replacing cameras every 6 months, right? You'll never have the money.
Yeah, indeed. So what exactly do you want to know in this case? What exactly do you want some opinion on? Best practices in general, or?
Best practices in general, if we were to say, yeah.
Yeah, so one thing to realize for people who are listening to this podcast and have never worked with computer vision before is that whatever computer vision solution you build in your lab, it is guaranteed to break once you take it outside due to unforeseen circumstances. So imagine if you are building a security camera to detect if pigeons are walking into your house. Then you, of course, train it on images you download from the internet, or you train it with pigeons, you know, nicely in the center for your data set. And in the real world, it turns out it's dark, it's snowing, it's raining, and the pigeons are not exactly in the center. So that always breaks things. So the one good thing to try to do is to test in the real world as fast as possible and learn from that as fast as possible. And it's also important to know the limits of your hardware. So you should know what kind of camera you're using, what frame rate you're getting, how much light it can have, etc.
I actually, I know there's a company in Berlin and they were doing camera technology to detect how clean shared vehicles are. And yeah. First person that went in, they were like, okay, mess this car up and we'll see if we can detect it. So someone stuck it, got a piece of paper and stuck it where the air vent is and it never detected it. Because they were more prone to detecting stuff on the seats, on the floors, spills, rubbish. How do you prepare for something like that?
Yeah. And there is the frustration of working with computer vision and the fun, you know? There's always something where you think, oh man, I didn't think about this edge case.
Yeah, the human rationale is fantastic.
So yeah.
I suppose to be a computer vision engineer, what do you need to know about cameras?
Yeah, so if you, like as a non-computer vision engineer, you always think, oh, and then I just acquire my image and it's done. But in reality, you have to think about what frame rate do you want, how much light is getting in, what kind of focus do I want? Do I need to have a global shutter or can I have a rolling shutter? All those things are important and should be considered. And then for also, how do you get the information on your device? Can you load it directly into your GPU memory or does it have to be acquired via CPU? Oh. Yeah, so like it won't amaze you that self-driving cars don't have a Logitech webcam in them. They have some better and more expensive cameras.
Yeah, again, the development of cameras has been insane with smartphone technologies, right?
Yeah. Do you frequently, when trying to recruit people or when talking to companies, do you frequently get requests for camera knowledge or camera engineers?
So it depends. So recently, I mean only a couple of weeks, there was a company who's doing autonomous drone technology. They've got the computer vision talents, which is one thing, a little bit more harder, but they wanted what is called like a software engineer, AI software engineer. I've heard companies call it a CUDA engineer, a GPU engineer, basically someone who's a software engineer with embedded devices, but also has that experience with computer vision. And their overall role is to ensure that the algorithms will run on the devices. The health will stay strong as well, so that you're always getting, you know, quality data. That was probably the closest. I've not seen it where they want people working with, you know, specifics of certain pixel sizes, certain amounts of images, dealing with a certain type of images. But I guess when the industry grows, you know, you'll see a lot of people only wanting to hire someone for computer vision who comes from medical imaging to go into medical imaging, autonomous driving into autonomous driving, and something similar like that. Almost the way a Python software engineer won't get a job as a JavaScript developer. You know, they're going to become more specialized as they grow.
Yeah, I think or hope that the same will happen in robotics. But because at the moment, if people want to get started with machine learning and computer vision, there are so many challenges on Kaggle where you can easily get a already curated data set and you already have a curated, you know, output and metric you try to optimize. And there's such a big difference when you try to deploy it in the real world and you finally hit this real data and hit all these other problems. Or try to optimize running it on a GPU, you know, to put it on a robot. I think that's a massive skill, which is not that easy to acquire if you don't have your own robot or car or Raspberry Pi. There's already a steep price to learn it, which I think makes these people even more valuable.
Yeah. So I suppose while we're coming towards the end, then let's kind of talk about where we're on the future of computer vision. What do you see as, you know, the important skills to know or to learn if you want a job in computer vision?
Yeah, it's a good question. So maybe you can also comment on this. What requests do you frequently get?
Oh, so it's, you know, again, I do come in at the end where I try to be as relevant as possible. A lot of it would be, medical imaging is very popular. Companies who want someone who can work on computer vision, but also knows about GPUs, about building algorithms on edge devices. So it's a lot less of a research field now and a lot more of a practical in production field.
Yeah. So I think you still have this pyramid, right? Where like your basis is probably something like programming. So that's one skill which people have to have. You have to have some knowledge in machine learning. And then the last, you know, the cherry on the cake, what is it in English?
Icing on the cake.
The icing on the cake. There's no cherries involved. But it would be amazing if you also have experience with the platform you want to deploy on. So if you're applying at a robotics company, it's great if you as a software engineer have experience deploying on a robot. And if you want to deploy an algorithm to analyze images in an S3 bucket, you know, on a server, it's great if you have experience working with the Amazon or Google stack. So ultimately, as you're saying, we are now moving out of the research phase where companies are just trying something. And now people are really going to do computer vision for a purpose.
Yeah. So it's quite important. And you've also mentioned as well about robotics. Going on to that, so I've actually started to see a lot more robotic startups across Germany. What do you see about anyone who wants to get into robotics? What should they be looking at?
Yeah, so what I always like to see is if people notice what I've said before, that outside in the real world, things tend to break. So it's also possible that your camera breaks or that your camera starts vibrating. All these things are not something you can learn in a course. So doing some kind of project, building some kind of tiny robot, trying to analyze your drone images, something like that, I always like to see when I try to interview people. And there's already some great tools and libraries to get started. So if you want, you can try the Image AI library, where you very easily get some 2D bounding box detection going on, right? Or Google's Teachable Machine, where you can very easily do recognition of objects or room recognition in less than 10 minutes from training to deployment. All these kind of things are great. Or also for robotics, try to learn, get really well skilled in ROS, the robot operating system. Because ultimately, I think and hope that most companies are going to use that to deploy their tech on.
Yeah. And look, if we say ROS is going to be a potential emerging market, do you know of anywhere else that could be an emerging market that you see for computer vision?
Emerging for robotics, you mean? Or
I suppose if we talk about computer vision as an industry, you know, you can kind of break it down into your areas. You would have autonomous driving, robotics, medical imaging.
Yeah.
You know, do you see anything else that we probably haven't seen yet? Maybe retail. I've seen some retail companies, but there's definitely room out there for a giant to build something that will just scan your entire basket.
Yeah. So something I already said is just know your platform you deploy on, right? So I will very sternly say that if you want to get a job in robotics, it's great if you learn to work with hardware. So I think that CUDA, for example, for NVIDIA, for the NVIDIA platform, CUDA is the coolest thing since machine learning. Trying to compare your algorithms is a fantastic feeling, and I think it's highly relevant if you don't want to be bound to your tiny amount of CPUs on your robots.
Roland, I think that's kind of us done for time for the moment. I really appreciate having you on. For everyone listening, this is the Computer Vision in Production podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Kelly. Today's guest was Roland Mertens. Roland, thanks a million. It's been great.
Yeah, thanks, Anthony, for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Computer Vision in Production podcast with your host, Anthony Kelly. To make sure you get updates on the latest episodes of the show, make sure you subscribe on your preferred podcast listening app or add me on LinkedIn.